And with me in the Care of Yes studios this afternoon are Professor Diana Stetko and Jason Knight. Diana Stetko is Assistant Department Head in the English Department here at UL Lafayette. She also teaches, among many other things, playwriting, and is here to talk about her new production. It is a Milena Theater Group production presented by Freetown Studios, and it's called Noir, A Love Story. And Diana, I know you have a very loyal following. You've been doing productions here on campus for 10 years now? Longer?
14
yeah. years with the Milena Theater Group.
There's a line in the play, eternity is a long time. I think I wrote it in mind with how long I've been doing this here.
Well, yeah. And I know that many of your actors and friends have heard you say year after year, never again, never again.
Well, it's like a gift and a curse, you know. While you're doing it, you wonder why you're doing this to yourself. And then one day it comes together. I never know how exactly. I don't mean to say I don't know what I'm doing at all. But I never know when the rhythm of a production will gel and happen. And sometimes it's 2 weeks before. Sometimes it's 4 days before, like this one. And then when that happens and you see it and it's beautiful, you think, oh, yeah, that's why I'm doing this. But the other thing that I have a hard time explaining is I do plays to do research on how to do theater in ways that haven't been done before. So it is research and it is a bit of a laboratory. And when I say I'm not doing this again, I mean I'm not doing this type of play. I'm done with that. And then whatever I learn here, I take in the classroom. And then often the people in the playwriting seminars become actors either before or after the production. It's a process.
Well, I think anyone who's ever seen one of your productions would never, ever say that you don't know what you're doing, because that that finished product, and not only is it an experiment in research, but again, another thing that people know is that you have one production only. There is one night to see it, although you have a couple rehearsals we'll talk about, but you do it that one night and one night only.
Because it gets to that, it's like a concert, you know, when I was an undergrad in the old country, and there were these concerts in cathedrals, and it was like a one-time event, and it was an event because it was one time, and it always stayed with me, these evenings when you can walk into a cathedral and listen to somebody playing the organ, somebody who had rehearsed probably for months, and you had one evening. So I wanted an event. And also, I'm working with people who killed themselves for me there in terms of schedule, whose major or business or career this is not. They're doing me a favor to drag these people through 3 weeks of performance or something like that. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. So part of it is loyalty, and you know, I'm grateful for the time they put into up to this one night. And part of it is that I wanted to reproduce the notion of the event. It's an event. It's one time, and then it goes away.
Well, before we talk about this one time, Noir, A Love Story, and even before we talk about the Milena Theater Group, which has been in our community for 14 years, let me just take you back just a little bit to let people know. You did mention the old country. you came from Romania.
Yes.
And got your PhD here in the States. Mm-hmm. But tell us just a bit about your theater background in Romania and what inspired you? You mentioned a concert and a cathedral, but where was your theater inspiration from?
Do we have time for
that? Okay. Just a thumbnail. Thumbnail.
Right. There were two things. Like, this is the 2 second version of my past. There was
Make
a man.
It 2 minutes.
Okay. There was a man. There was an actor. I saw him. I walked into. I always sound like I walk into buildings and things happen, but really it did. I walked into this theater in my hometown one evening, and he was performing Oedipus Rex, and he was dressed in white completely. He was gaunt and pale and amazing, and he was performing Oedipus 6 feet into the air. He was walking on something. It wasn't quite a rope. It was a little bit of. But so I looked up at this man, and it seemed to me at that moment that that image and what the stage and the theater and its possibilities were was the most beautiful and interesting thing I've ever seen. So I wanted to do it, and I wanted to do it better. And I wanted to do it not boringly. And every time I do a play, I'm trying to do something else completely differently, but equally beautifully. Mm. And I know often it sounds like snobism, but and it is a sort of snobism, but that's it's that image. I can't betray that image.
Well, if you can keep producing theater 6 feet up in the air and keep people
coming back. That's one thing I could never do. I've never managed to do flight, like the illusion of flight. I keep wanting, but then I think I'll hurt a student and go to jail. So, you know, the enthusiasm sort of drops.
Well, sort of metaphorically 6 feet in the air that you continue to do. You keep those, you keep thwarting people's understanding.
And then I saw a production of The Master and Margarita, which is Bulgakov's book, which I thought could never be staged. And this woman, this extraordinary woman in Bucharest, had done it. And I saw it and I thought two things. One, that I could do it too. And two, that there was nothing that's not possible on the stage. And one of the things that kills me every time is that people run to cinema. And I understand why. I mean, you have the technology and you have all that beauty there. But if somebody tried with much simpler means on the stage to create like this illusion that everything is possible, and I want to do it, and I want to do it beautifully. So those were the events.
Give us an example from The Master and Margarita. What did you see on that stage that so impressed you?
There is a moment when Margarita, naked on a broom, dipped in some Estée Lauder kind of, you wanted details,
cream. I remember the scene.
Yes. Flies. It goes through the rooftop. I think the rooftop opens and she flies above Moscow towards the party where she's going to be the devil's mistress for the evening. And they did that. The stage was on an incline and all these like skylights opened. And these people took flight. And that woman, who wasn't naked but looked like it very much on a broom, took flight. And so they did it. And they did the illusion of three-dimensionality and the illusion. And they also did something that this was a particular director I was in awe of. She did tableau vivants. People would freeze all of a sudden. And they would look like paintings. They would recreate various, which you could recognize because they were, you know, Vermeers or Rembrandts or things that everybody could recognize. And then they would move again. And the illusion that was created there between stillness. I learned from that woman what it means to be still on the stage. Everybody agitates all the time on the stage. And I want them to be still because that's when they can control it, space.
Well, let's talk about how you've instilled some of these thoughts in your plays. You started the Milena Theater Group 14 years ago now, here at UL Lafayette.
Yes.
Your first production was in Burke Theater, I remember.
Milena Stripping. It's the title of the group. Mm-hmm. The group didn't have a title until I did that play and dropped 150 pounds of sand on the stage. Good times. And so that was the first play.
What was your, even though it didn't have a title, what was your thinking about that? And I hate to even call it a troupe. It's really evolved. And
I called it physical theater because of its opposite, because of what I've just, I don't know if this is completely incoherent, because I want people to be still, because I love silence as much as the spoken word, because music is often more important than words, because things that are not being accomplished are more important, like restraint. In this play, everybody's in love with somebody and nobody can touch anybody, and yet there is the illusion of a caress all the time. Those kind of things. Because of that, I called it physical theater. And because I worked with artists and architects and musicians and whoever would really have me and work with me, I also called it interdisciplinary. So that was the idea, interdisciplinary physical theater. Mm-hmm. And then at the back of it all was the notion that this was my research. Unfortunately, I keep having to explain that because it's not pieces of paper. It's not some sort of quotation from an article, but it is research.
And for most of us, it happens one night, maybe once a year. So, yes, you do have to keep re-explaining a little bit of it. But it's interesting that you mentioned the musicians, the artists. Those really remain a mark of your theater group. Some have stayed with you for years and years.
For 10 years.
Even though the actors have changed.
10 years. I haven't gotten over that.
You have artists who create sets for you. You have people very interested in music and technology who create these amazing soundtracks for you. And so you may not be creating always these tableaux vivants, but there are elements of that, as if they were in a frame, these actors. And
Well, I work very well with people who know me very well, and it's very difficult for me to introduce myself to people. It's difficult. So when I have somebody like Susan David, who's the executive director and artiste extraordinaire, I asked her today, what is your function at Freetown? And she said, artiste extraordinaire and executive director. So I've worked with Susan for probably 10 years now, and she has done extraordinary things, from 22-foot paintings she suspended, you know, hanging 30 feet into from the ceiling, doing all kind of acrobatics that gave me small coronaries during each rehearsal, to actually being on the stage. She is on the stage here, to becoming a character. That's another
thing. Is this her first appearance as a character?
No. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you something really funny about this being her second appearance. But if people know me very well, I don't have to explain, and that saves a lot of time, and it's an economy and an understanding that I can count on, which is why it's very difficult for me to work with new people. I have to take such a risk to work with someone new that keeps me awake for days after I actually ask them to work with me.
I want to tell people, before we continue talking about this particular play, my guest, Professor Diana Stetko, assistant head of the English department, also a playwright. She teaches playwriting in the English department. She is the founder of the Milena Theater Group, and with us as well is Jason Knight, who appears in this production called Noir, A Love Story. Now, you mentioned that you like to know people very, very well, mm-hmm. but one thing that people are also aware of is that even though you keep the same set designer and many of the other people that you work with, you often focus on different actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. Throughout the 14 years, you've centered your writing around many of the actors who appear in your play. How does that... It seems that way.
The writing. This is the first time when this happens. I've never collaborated with anybody.
Not collaborated, but
in writing.
The story is perhaps centered
around
a person.
Mm-hmm. It's an image. I've always had, and I'm talking about this in the blog. I have a production blog that helps me sort my thoughts while I'm doing this. It has been an image. It's always, and it's kind of obsessive, and I'm not ashamed that I obsess about the same thing, because, you know, Hermann Hesse does it too, so I always tell myself I'm in great company. It's a lonely man, usually. I call him a Steppenwolf. It's somebody isolated. I also call him in this play an internal exile. And around him, there's a world that's trying to both conquer him, change him, and adapt itself to him, and that creates a tension and a paradox. Will he change the world? Will the world change him? What will happen to the people watching? That has always been the image. Mm-hmm. So what people don't know, perhaps I shouldn't talk about it here, is that when they walk into my class, there's always a chance that their silences or their body language or the expression of their faces or something will trigger an image. And I have to follow it for that. And sometimes they said no, and I didn't.
Well, Jason didn't say no, did you, Jason? No. So you're an image in this play, Noir, A Love Story. How did you encounter each other? Were you in a class with Diana? Or
I've been in several classes with her, actually.
He's minoring
the first one was
in
3 years
ago,
I think.
Yeah.
I think I've been in 5 or 6. I've mm-hmm. lost count. Mm-hmm.
And was this the first time you tried to get him to be an image in your play?
No. The first time he was in my class, I saw him somewhere. I didn't know it was this particular character, but there was something there that I wanted to work with. And then you disappeared somewhere, and then you came back after a while.
The image reappeared. Well, Jason, what is it about minoring in Diana?
That's a question for you.
Why did you keep coming back to her classes? What was it about her classes? Are you a writer? An English major?
Yeah. I'm working on a PhD in English. I started here in literary studies. Have since crossed over into creative writing. The first class was an American 20th century postmodern class that I'd already been introduced to some of these ideas in my master's program, but I was drawn to those, and I liked her approach to the material, and so I felt the need to come back.
Mm-hmm. So you've had a playwriting class with Diana as well?
No, not yet. That's next semester.
Been in a play can you take the playwriting
class. Right, that makes sense, I think.
Yeah, but obviously in these classes there was something that was very interesting to you about the way she presented literature, images, that you were very drawn to. Is that a difficult thing to describe?
There was. It is hard to describe. She's one of the only professors I've been in a class with who talks about literary theory much. Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, maybe this is a good time to ask Diana, what was it that you, because obviously he was enjoying these classes and watching you as a teacher, but you were observing the image of Jason in your classes, absorbing. What was it about
Unbeknownst
to you, that's right. He's now that image, that main lead
so
image.
So what was it that it was him and not somebody else?
Yes.
His silences. People talk a lot. People are very loud. People have nothing to say. Mm-hmm. And he did a presentation in a class, and it was slightly excruciating because before every sentence there was a silence. But the sentence...
I suffered as well.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. Beautifully, which was another thing.
If one is to suffer.
One should suffer beautifully. Yes. So, so it was after each silence came a profound sentence, and I thought, here's someone... Though suffering because of the rhythm of this presentation will not just spew nonsense to cover silence. It was the silence.
So out of those silences in Jason's presentation and his being in your class, how did you begin shaping this image that is central to noir, a love story?
It was a different kind of isolation. I realized that in something like the Silencio project, where the people were prisoners, so the isolation was forced on them. In The Happiness Machine, there was a man who claimed to be isolated, but he owned a radio station that communicated with the entire world. And I saw a perfect isolation with a desperate need to communicate, but the unwillingness to compromise in how to do it. And I thought that who are the loneliest people in movies that we know, and it's the PI, it's the private investigator, it's this guy always in the streets at night. And then the images of the noir, the light bulb, the lonely hotel rooms, mm-hmm. The woman who's always trouble and in trouble, and those like sordid, solitary spaces inhabited by somebody very intelligent, but whose intelligence, instead of allowing him to bond with the world he surveys, isolates it from him, from that world completely.
And those are very familiar images you're describing. Mm-hmm. We all know the Philip Marlowe character in so many American films from the 40s and 50s. Were you a student of those films and books? Did you like noir literature, Jason?
In that first class, we did read Noir by Robert Coover. Other than that, no, I haven't had a lot of experience with
Noir. It was Paul Auster, too, with City of Glass,
right,
where Daniel Quinn...
How could I forget Auster?
Yes, mm-hmm. Where Daniel Quinn becomes...
Well, having being this character now, this PI in Noir Love Story, how have you developed this character? Has this been a difficult role for you?
It's because we started back in August rehearsing once a week with the script as it was then, which is doubled in size. And
I start with a skeleton script. Okay. I never start with something because I work with what people already have. I don't want to impose a structure.
Mm-hmm. And this actually became even something more because you began to collaborate with the script.
Without knowing
inadvertently,
it.
Inadvertently, yeah.
And was that because
it was
you added lines?
Conversations, many of which were over email, so she was left with a transcript of what I had said,
yeah,
conveniently.
They were not necessarily conversations about the play, but slowly I could no longer distinguish between Knight
reality
and Knight.
Make-believe.
His last name is Knight with a K, as in Knight Errant. Mm-hmm. My character's name is Knight, as in Knight Falls. Mm-hmm. So Knight and Knight started overlapping. And then lines that would emerge during these conversations fit the character perfectly. So the next day I would go and say, oh, I added like this five things you said last night. So all of a sudden,
I show up to rehearsal, get a new text. And
but
yeah,
she was giving
you,
you back your words. Yeah. Anyways. And so what kinds of things were you adding? Or is it difficult to distinguish now between...
Well, look, we were talking about vampires one evening.
Oh, yeah.
And he produces this like... pearl, you know, comes out of his mouth and he says, well, left alone and without obligation, I do become nocturnal. How can you not put that on the stage? I'm sorry. So,
this was in an email, or you just said this?
I think it was a text message, actually.
And do you think, were you inspired by this image that Diana had created and that you were becoming? Were these just normal thoughts for you, or were you channeling something? I don't mean...
Not so much as being seen.
Yes.
perhaps there was more influence than I realized at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Becoming is good, because that's what this process has been for me since August. Started with the weekly rehearsals. Since then, we've obviously been meeting more every day, weekends, all day. So it's gotten more and more intense. And the intensity is important. I don't recognize the person that started this in August. Okay. I've definitely become...
Well, describe your character for those of our listeners who may not know much about noir or Diana's characters. Describe yourself.
As the character?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. He's isolated, has trouble reaching other people, but he also has a rhythm and a slowness about him that I've learned to do. Not quite slow motion, but there's a
fluidity,
yes.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other characters in the play. Do you have a relation?
Yeah, there are.
Oh, come to think of it.
They're just props for you, I guess. But how do you relate to these characters? And I know Diana described that this is a process of not connecting, of never quite touching.
Right.
Or
the suggestion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is he someone who wants to be connected?
Some of them try to connect to my character. I try to connect to some of them. But there's never the connection.
Mm-hmm. And then he lives, I'm talking about the character now, with two imaginary people. He has an imaginary charwoman, because one needs that, or a butler. And he has an imaginary sound guy who is the complete opposite of him physically. You know, tough guy, street cred, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And who has no trouble connecting to women, picking them up from the audience, doing whatever he needs.
I feel like he's what my
do.
Character would like to be.
Exactly,
times.
And cannot. So these are two
Hence
imaginary.
The resentment that
yes,
I have for
you feel for this imaginary character.
Yes, but they live with him always, and they're always somehow both surveying, cleaning, and occupying his space. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the femme fatale who has to burst.
Obtrusively.
On the scene.
It's always a part of the noir literature.
It's always a part of the noir. But what I wanted to do initially was to, because that was the research here, I wanted to take a very established American genre, and I don't do Westerns, so noir was my next best thing, and midway change it into a completely different genre and see what happens. What happens to the characters, what happens to the play, what happens to the rhythm, what happens to the public, for that matter. So... I'm splicing a noir with the fantastic, because if you look at the poster there it says he has friends on the other side.
Yes.
So at some point he performs a seance and a creature appears. So in the end there are two, let's call them real, as in not in his head, women, a real one, the femme, that he should be attracted to, that he is kind of in the beginning, that she's intrusive but surprising. His line in connection with her is, she took my breath away. That's the moment she enters. And then there's this thing that comes from the other side, which is attractive because it is as freakish as he is. Mm-hmm. So there's a different kind of recognition there. So here is this man between two genres now, between two women representing two completely different worlds, having to make a decision whom he's going to save, depending on whom he saves, the girl or the world.
Will depend upon what genre of literature high school students read from now on.
Yeah.
So the noir genre, and then it goes into the fantastical. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about that, Jason? Was that a comfortable split for you?
3 years ago, it probably wouldn't have been. Mm-hmm. But as I've continued to work with Diana, yeah, I have gotten more comfortable with the hybridity. Mm-hmm. In fact, my independent study that we did together this summer was a splicing of the Southern Gothic and postmodern.
Mm. Yeah, unlikely. Mm-hmm. Very unlikely things together.
Well, and I think, again, anyone in our audience who is familiar with your work, has been to see your plays, would be somewhat familiar with that idea, that splitting of genres and that hybridization.
And tragedy and comedy doing terrible things to really jolly tunes, and then being incredibly upbeat to some tragic soundtrack. Mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. To be programmed into an emotion by a sound is boring, which is why so many horror films are not scary at all, because at the right moment you have a loud noise that prepares me for the fear. But if I had something nice and happy in the background, I wouldn't be prepared for that. So,
something a little more
horrific. So it's a different kind of tension. Right. I like paradoxes. I like intersections. I like things that don't connect.
Which, again, draws so many people to your plays year after year. Now, the play will open and close Friday night. one night only, but you are adding some open rehearsals for those people who absolutely can't go on Friday.
I am adding open rehearsals both for the people who can't go on Friday and because I cannot, for the first time ever, I cannot accommodate a lot of people. We are doing this in Fletcher, but over my dead body is sitting anyone in the house. I'm shutting down the house and everybody sits on the stage. They have to inhabit his space.
Which really returns back to the first play.
Yes, they can't watch noir from a distance. And part of the reason is, psychological, but the truth behind that is a small personal tragedy. This extraordinary woman who used to do lights for me, Jamie Ferris, life, you know, interfered and she can no longer do it. And I was so grateful for the 10 years, but also so devastated for not having her to do lighting design that I couldn't move to someone else. Because everybody said, move to the next person. I said, I can't. I'm mourning. I need a moment. And so we don't have lights. We have.
Well, which actually, as you said, for noir works quite well. Very dark, close.
He sets up shop in an abandoned lamp factory. And that allowed me to have all kind of lamps. But you can't watch that from afar. It's not a show. You have to be in it. You have to share the lighting and the space.
So there will be about, 75 seats?
Yeah.
And a little bit of standing room.
Yeah.
So that's Friday night in Fletcher here on the UL campus. And there's a pre-show at 7:30 and then the play starts right at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, and there's no, this is probably important, there's no break between.
So people should really get there at 7:30.
If people want to see the pre-show, what they'll see is all the relationships between the characters. No text. It's all choreography. And then there are moments when nothing happens and then people come together again. So it'll give them a chance to get into the rhythm of the play. But they can come at, 10 to 8 or a minute to 8 if they so decide.
We should probably caution them, though, that they really should get there a whole lot earlier. Because
if they want to see it, yes.
That's right. It's so limited, again, about 75 seats. So the open rehearsals?
The open rehearsals, same schedule, 7:30 pre-show, 8 o'clock, moving seamlessly into the show, no break.
Okay.
We keep not talking about the other people in the play, and I feel a little guilty about
that. Let's say their names.
Yes. So there is the two imaginary people, Susan David, who's the charwoman, and
never seems to clean anything.
Jay Bruce Fuller, who is both the imaginary sound guy and the actual sound guy in the play, because Knight, the imaginary and the real, needs a soundtrack with every one of his scenarios. So he will tell Jay now. Or not now, depending on when he needs music. The joke I was telling you minutes ago about Susan. Susan was in one of my plays on the stage, so not just doing set design, in the language of mannequins, where she was cleaning the stage. And she said, you know, Diane, I'm very grateful that I'm on the stage again, cleaning again. 10 years later, her part on the stage is the same. She's walking about with a cleaning brush and sweeps the stage beautifully in slow motion.
Artistically.
Gracefully.
Spectacularly.
So Susan David is there, and then the femme fatale is?
The femme fatale is Cheyenne Matthews, and she is a graduate student in English, and she unknowingly also walked into my class one day.
And was captured in your
and
web.
And she was in the same class with him. It was the second... I think it was the second postmodern class, and they were sitting together having a conversation. So I saw it. Mm. I saw Knight and I saw the femme fatale, and something happened with those images, and they coincided. So
and they became incarnate in your play.
And there you go.
And Eliana is in your play as well.
Yes, she, like Cher, keeps announcing her last play. You know, The Happiness Machine was her last play, and The Silencio Project was her last play. This is her last play, because after this, she does move away. So
fans of Eliana Stetko, please see this play. If you are just tuning in and you're wondering what this fascinating production is that we're talking about, it is Diana Stetko's latest production. It's called Noir, A Love Story. My other guest, Jason Knight, plays Knight in Noir, A Love Story. And you can find out a bit more about the production through your blog you were mentioning. Do you want to give people the address for that?
It's Milena Group, one word, blogspot.com. Yeah.
Okay. So take a search for it. And probably if you put in Noir, A Love Story, Diana Stetko, it'll probably get you there.
I did change the title halfway because of him. I'm pointing to Knight right now. It was called A Farce Macabre. It was supposed to be farcical. It was supposed to be macabre because he does summon a creature, his friends on the other side. And then when the creature walked in and I had the triangle on the stage, something so beautiful happened between them that it became two love stories, the possibility, the suggestion of two love stories. And although he is the hero and his dilemma is the girl or the world, his real dilemma is this love story or that love story. And
then thus the title changed.
The title changed.
So Noir, A Love Story. You have an opportunity to see the open rehearsals Wednesday or Thursday in Fletcher Hall, 7:30, seamlessly into the 8 o'clock production. Friday is the opening night.
And closing night, yes.
Get there early, 7:30. The pre-show will start, but get there very early because only about 75 seats. So you get to see this amazing production. The 14th year of the Milena Theater Group, Freetown Studios, is presenting this piece. And Susan David as executive director. She is also the artistic set designer, artistic director as well.
Can I mention something about the set? The funniest moment in putting the set together was taking Knight. I'm sorry, I can't call him Jason because I've been calling him Knight for months now. So taking Knight to the UL Furniture Cemetery. I'm sure it has a better title
Surplus.
Than that. Okay. And finding these odd things there, like a bank safe and a giant bird cage and other things that the physical plant was very surprised when I asked them to move on the stage in Fletcher. So it has evolved also out of the past of this institution, as if, you know, when you go back with a particular genre, somehow it attracts memories and nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew where these objects had come from, but clearly they came from somewhere.
The ghosts of offices and classrooms.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Absolutely. Well, Fletcher Hall, you can see those ghosts as well as others, along with Jason Knight performing in Noir, A Love Story, written by my guest Diana Stetko and Jason as well in collaboration. Check out that blog spot for more information about the production and some great writing, just musings about what it means to write plays and what it means to direct a play. Really fascinating. I think you'll find that. And that is melenatheater.blogspot.com. All right. Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you.
Bonne chance this Friday. Friday, 7:30 in Fletcher Hall Auditorium on the UL campus. If you can't make that or you'd like to see it again, open rehearsals Wednesday and Thursday evenings in Fletcher as well. Thank you both, Jason Knight.
Thank you.
And Diana Stetko.
Thanks.